Welcome to the Sunday Times Politics Weekly, where we explore the week's big political stories. I'm Mike Siluma, and thanks for joining us. Recently, the contentious issue of the remuneration regime for public office bearers, including cabinet ministers, has come under the spotlight. This off the back of news that the ministerial handbook, the famous or infamous ministerial handbook, depending on where you're standing, which regulates ministers' benefits, has been revised to increase the benefits. Obviously, this was later put to the presidency, which then said that the president had decided to review. To look at the issue, today we are joined by Dr. Mark Basson, chairperson of 21st Century, as well as Ruben Maleka, who's the acting deputy general manager for the Public Servants Association of South Africa. Also with us is Mawanda Mashabalala, who's a senior political writer on the Sunday Times.
With immediate effect.
When people saw us,
and I quote, "In 2 years' time, Eskom's problems will be a thing of the past. People won't even remember load shedding," unquote.
They put saliva on the paper.
I'm in charge. That's why these fools are running around here. I'm in charge.
And then they share that zone.
Point of order, Chairperson.
Order, Chairperson.
Point of order, ruling party by
point of order.
Must step aside within 30 days.
No, I'm not going to apologize.
He has no brains whatsoever.
So the ANC president was sabotaged again yesterday?
Well, sabotage, that can be
this
determined.
Is not a shit.
Welcome to all of you. Mawande, let us start with you, because you are the one who always said the cat among the pigeons. You know, the journalists are always the ones who go digging and scratching around and stimulating, all the public debate that happens. The ministerial handbook has been around for a while. I know that we have got Mark, Dr. Basson, with us, who has been intimately involved in drafting it and revising it, etc. But from a news and public conversation point of view, why has the ministerial handbook come back into the news and into public discourse?
Yes, Bramak. Well, basically, as you say, Bramak, the ministerial handbook is a living document, so to speak, that keeps on being changed as and when those that are in charge feel necessary. But I think what has become sort of a controversy, which makes us find where we find ourselves in now discussing it, is how sometimes it seems to be changed secretly, so to speak, by the powers that be, and the public is never consulted, or it's never done in the open such that people know as and when it happens. But it would be the work of journalists, as you say, that would expose such things. So recently, what was exposed are the current, provisions, some of the provisions that are contained in it, such as ministers and deputy ministers not paying for water, not paying for electricity. And that now becomes controversial in the sense that we know that there's this ongoing power crisis in the country, the load shedding and high cost of living, high cost of electricity itself for the general people like me and you. So it becomes controversial in that sense that, I mean, those that are in power are still being given such sweeteners, despite them earning so high as public servants as per their salaries. So that's how it comes back to the fore, Bramak, given the challenges that are faced by the general public in terms of the high cost of living, on issues like power and electricity and water and other things, while ministers are living comfortably and continue to get more perks on top of the too many perks that they have already.
And now the presidency say they're going to revise the handbook,
which is nothing but a PR stunt as far as I'm concerned, Bramak, because he says that only after the exposure, when the issue has been brought into the public domain by the media. But had journalists not gotten hold of these new niceties that are provided for in the ministerial handbook, I doubt he would have done that. He does that seeing the public reaction to that exposure, which says But it can be. And especially for him, it becomes important for him to pull such a PR stunt, the current president, because when he came through, he promised a lot of things, chief among which was to cut the Fed. Remember, he promised to cut down the cabinet itself, would never happen. Instead, we had too many deputy ministers. He promised to cut these benefits. Ministers were going to travel on economy and all those things. And then you see these things. So it sort of exposes all the promises that he made when he came into power in 2018 in the country, 2017 in the ANC, but nothing but hollow. So he felt the need to do that, especially now that he is seeking a second term. Also has that element of speaking to his aspiration of a second term in the ANC conference in December.
Ruben Malika, you represent the public servants. What is your perspective of the ministerial handbook, but more broadly, the distinction that is made between the political office bearers and public servants generally? Do you think that there must be a separation, or whether we should be saying that public office bearers must be treated the same as any other public servant?
Look, here we're talking about a terminology that is separating equally the same category of people. Remember, as a politician, you serve the public at the same time. And when you're public servants, you serve the public. But it's just that on a different levels and different responsibilities and how you get to serve those people or the people in general. But one thing that we can actually distinguish with the SMS handbook, which has been exposed with the current stand on the issue of electricity and water that was given to the, public office bearers. One can see all the ministers and deputy ministers. One would have realized that at some point it had to be exposed to say that in the midst of everything that government has been saying, especially ministers themselves and the president, pleading poverty from left, right, and center, about why they cannot be able to, serve the public because of the state of the fiscals, while at the same time going to extend, behind the scenes, increasing those kind of benefits. That was just a slap in the face of, public servants who, for quite some time, let me say for about 3 years. And it's an irony that in the period of 3 years, under the presidency of Ramaphosa, public servants never received any increase. At the same time, even under his presidency, he has taken away a resolution that we have concluded in the previous dispensation under President Zuma, one of 2018. So all those combined, and with the incapacity of the state on two aspects, one would have just noticed that in the recent month of September and October, most of the municipalities are unable to provide water services to the communities. Just as of today, the people of Polokwane, Seshego, and everywhere were protesting merely because of they're saying that it's more than a month that they've not been able to find water in their taps. At the same time, the country is reeling from, high number of, load shedding as a result of ESCOM unable to provide services. So the two aspects that I'm talking to, which are a problem to the country, we find that the president finds it fit to say that the ministers and deputy ministers would not be paying for those services. At the same time, just being one of those issues to compare that, a public office bearer who earns above $1 million vis-a-vis a public servant. These are the two people that are serving the public. One, obviously, given one can justify that, why is he earning $1 million? Which is another debate. Another one earning way below, but the one that earns more, being given, free Christmas present through the so-called, office bearer handbook, which in itself, I think it's been abused in this instance.
Okay, Dr. Bassin, I'd like for you to come in here and give us your perspective, your expert space, your remuneration expert's perspective. You have been involved with the crafting of the handbook.
Thank you, Mike. Thanks for the question. And thank you, Ruben, for that introductory remarks. Yes, I have been involved in setting the pay of public office bearers and the SMS.
Sorry, what is the SMS? We know the SMS for the phone. What is the SMS?
Senior Management Service. Ruben made reference to the SMS handbook. I think he was referring to the ministerial handbook. But I think that for me, I would like to split out two issues. The one issue is the timing of this with the service delivery and the issues in the country. The second part is the pay itself. And I think the easier place to start is the pay itself. Let me come out very boldly and early in the debate. The pay of a minister at 2.4 million, I think, is fair. On the Johannesburg Stock Exchange, a small cap CEO earns 3.1 million. That's a very small company. A medium cap, 3.9 million. And the large company, 7.2. So we're not going to count the large companies, but 3 million is about the ballpark, and a minister at 2.4. In addition to that, the minister does get the tools of trade book. There's a tools of trade and there's a ministerial handbook. That is to govern the benefits and perks. And if you look at private sector, if the CEO of a bank or a mine needs to fly to London or Switzerland or New York, the company pays for them. They don't pay for that out of their salary. It's the same with our minister or president. The state pays for you to go and do that business. That's what's meant by tools of trade. That's what's meant by the ministerial handbook. You know, it governs the extent to which you can travel or the extent to which you're protected. And that is no different from the private sector. So at 2.4 million, given the hours that they work, and I can honestly say I've interacted with enough ministers and the president to know the hours are very long and they work really hard. I think the pay is fair. If you take the lowest level pay of someone working in government, in other words, now you're looking at a civil servant who is equate level one, which means it's the very first step, cleaners and tea people and things like that. They earn around 100,000 per annum. Now, if you divide 100,000 per annum into 3 million, which is what the president earns, it's a pay gap ratio of 1 in 30. 1 in 30 is extremely flat. It is almost the flattest in the world. In South Africa, you take private sector, it's about 1 in 100. The next flattest after 1 in 30 would be New Zealand, Japan, and the Nordic states, where it's about 1 in 40, 1 in 50. So our pay slope is flat. There's no problem with the pay slope. Let's go back to part A, if that's part B, which was the easier bit, the actual pay and how we set it. The ministerial handbook should go through the Independent Remuneration Commission. Now, that is chaired by a judge. There are independent commissioners, and they debate that, and they are the ones that recommend to president what should go in there. What's not clear in all of this is if this went through that Independent Remuneration Commission or not. If it went through, that means the governance that's in place was there. But if it did not go through them, then I take the journalist's view quite seriously that it was done secretly, and had the journalists have not picked it up, it would have really gone through quite underhand. There, I believe in a strong journalist and a strong media. And thank you to all the journalists and media. We need strong journalists and media. So the timing of giving that free electricity and free water was poor, given blackouts and the water situation. But the truth is, the ministers and public office bearers have been living in, I don't want to use the word compounds, but maybe it's the best way to describe it, little villages, where you stay in that village, a ministerial village, and the yes, it is for free. You do get water and electricity. You might sometimes have to pay the fringe benefit tax, but it's not, they're not the only ones that have a handbook governing all of this. You've got this SMS, Senior Management Handbook 2, which governs the benefits of senior managers as well. So maybe it would be very interesting to take a look at that SMS. It's on the DPSA website. It's available for everyone to see. And the gap actually between the DGs, the Director Generals, and the public office bearers, it's not as big as what we think it is. The reason I think we can't combine them, in other words, combine the civil service with the public office bearers, is that public office bearers are elected. They are elected members, whereas the other one, it's a full-time job. They're not elected. So if one can find a way around that, then I suppose one could merge it. Or we can keep it as elected and a full-time job and then just have one seamless from Equate 1 going all the way to president and everyone's on a single pay structure. That's just mechanics. That's easy to do for a remuneration.
Yeah, let me come in there. I think that you've made the point that you believe that the remuneration, by way of example, the remuneration for a minister at 2.4 is fair, and you're comparing that to what is happening elsewhere in the economy. But what then do we say to South Africans who say the minister is getting, for example, the minister of water affairs is getting 2.4 and we're having all these problems with water in the country? Or the minister of public enterprises is responsible for Eskom and we're all suffering. And it does not look like the public office bearers are subjected, even if we were to say that the actual amount, the quantum is fair and comparable, but it does not look like they are held to the same level of delivery accountability that happens in the private sector. So if citizens say, yeah, but we probably are not getting value for money for the 2.4, what would we say?
Mike, you're right. So let's look at, again, just split it out. If the Minister of Water and the Minister of Public Enterprises left and they put Ruben and Mike there as ministers, the 2.4 million would be fair pay for the job. Then in private sector, you've got this thing called performance-related pay, which is a short-term incentive and a long-term incentive. If you do not perform in private sector, you do not get your short-term incentive, you do not get your long-term incentive. Ministers do not have that. What they have instead is they get elected or not elected. Presidents should remove ministers that are not performing. So the performance management system should take care of that. And the electorate that does the elections should vote for different people. So that's their performance management system and their SDI and LTI. So there you can say, and I'm agreeing with you, the value for money is not there because we are having blackouts. We are having no water. And it confuses the issue. The issue is not that their pay is too much. The issue is that the service delivery is not happening.
Hey, Mawanda, I'd like for you to come in here. That we're talking performance, the performance of ministers in this case. I seem to recall some time back that the president said that the ministers were going to be signing performance agreements. And I don't recall hearing anything about that since. I mean, this is like a couple of years now. What has happened to that? Do you know?
Look, Bramaik, those are some of the things. You know, there's a lot of things with the South African government that are just cosmetics, as I said, PR stunts, feel good type of, you know, things that are done publicly, but you never get to hear about them. In fact, it won't be a new thing. It used to happen even in the with the previous president, Jacob Zuma, who would see these ministers signing. When they do the signing, it's all a public affair. It's highly publicized and all that, but a performance has got to be reviewed from time to time. That is the nature of a performance agreement. But we just never know whatever ends up with those things. And if you try to find out, you'll be frustrated. Well, it's a process. For instance, they would argue that last year there was a cabinet reshuffle, so maybe they signed new performance appraisals. So it's all gimmicks as far as I'm concerned, Bramaik, things such as so-called performance agreement for politicians, for politicians, there's no such a thing. It's all about political considerations and all the factions within the ANC. Now, especially now this year, heading to the conference, there is no way, even if as a president you see that a particular minister is not performing. But depending on how strategic they are for your interests within the ANC, there is no president who will ever move against such people. Mm. So I guess it's issues like that. All these things are somewhere gathering dust somewhere in the union buildings, and nobody knows what is going on. In fact, the president is very interested to do that. It's all about political considerations. That's the reality of the situation. Mm.
Ruben, do you want to come in here? Dr. Besson is saying that the performance of public office bearers or the politicians who hold positions like that, they are evaluated by the electorate. Do you think would you be happy with that? To say that no, they get their punishment or pain or praise at election time?
Look, let's separate the public servants from the ministers. Remember, for a department to perform, it is the leadership that will be taking a particular direction and a stance. I want to qualify this by saying, let's go back to the years of President Mbeki. I would say that the same public servants are the same public servants that performed at the time when under President Mbeki. And differently, the same public servants are now under the leadership of Ramaphosa, but with a different outcome and performance. The question is that who supposed to take the lead? Who must account? And generally to the public, obviously, it will be the ministers or the president. And obviously, when does the public has to, show that they are the ones that put them there? It's only when it comes after 5 years that goes to the elections. And it's not normally the ministers who would feel the pinch of saying which part to vote for. And normally, generally, the people that would go to the elections are not going to punish their favorite political party over a failed minister. Like, for instance, where we are sitting right now, you would find that people would complain about lack of water, electricity, transport, no trains that are available, and where is SAA? But people, when they go to take a stance in terms of votes, are not going to look for generally the individuals that were responsible for those portfolios. Are going to look for the party that they will vote for. And that is maybe the shortcoming that we are sitting with as South Africans, that normally the love of a party or, a choice of a party could find itself being, put in a particular level. But the people that are supposed to be serving, who in this case would be ministers, would be failing generally the public. And then it becomes a serious challenge for generally for the South Africans. But let me go back to the issue of the ministerial handbook. Look, it's fair what the prof has said, that a salary at 2.5 for a minister is fair. But one must also consider the fact that if you take it in with the PACS itself, maybe the prof can give us that particular analysis. Like, for instance, a minister doesn't have to pay for a petrol. They don't put petrol in their cars. Obviously, we know that they ride for free. Like you mentioned, the issue of where do they stay, and the issue of other PACS that are not mentioned. If they don't have to pay for a security, somebody who is a DG has to get security for himself, has to get a medical for himself, has to get all those small things that you look at them, but they are actually going to be coming from that particular salary of a DG, which is maybe at 2.2 million. But a minister at 2.4 million with the PACS that comes with everything that he has to write for free, I understand that obviously they also have mates that are already paid from the state. So, but all those perks are hidden. But if you put them in the context of how much it would cost if we have to calculate all those perks that are coming, it won't be less than a 3 million perk for a minister to be able to function. So, yeah, so one can say that where we are right now, from the Union perspective, there needs to be a point where the public service, the public office bearers, civil servants, local government, state-owned entities, we need to sit down and look at what is the fair remuneration for all of it. Because if you go to PRASA, the CEO of PRASA earns 10 million. And it's a state-owned entity. But a DG of a department way bigger than a state-owned entity such as PRASA, let's say Home Affairs, with 130-something offices countrywide, earns 2.2. So there's too much of the, you know, one needs to one day, and that is a point that I've once raised with the Minister for Public Service Administration, to say that we need to streamline remuneration that are coming out of one fiscus, which is the treasury, the public office bearers, the civil servants, local government, and SOEs. Like, for instance, what is the salary of a mayor of Tshwane? What is the salary of a mayor of Johannesburg? And vis-a-vis a mayor of Polokwane? There is too much disparities, and that is why one needs to say, but if we're talking about one fiscus, there must be uniformity and consistency.
Oh, before we round off, Dr. Basin, you seemed to be on the same wavelength with Ruben in terms of whether, for example, the 2.4 or even if cumulatively we're saying the 3 million remuneration for ministers is justifiable or fair. But I was wanting to raise a slightly different issue related to say, if you live in a country with the kind of inequalities and poverty that we have in South Africa, would people not be justified to say, look, our leaders must earn as close as possible to what the general population earns, you know, as opposed to them living in another world, basically, of privilege and elitism, you know? How do we navigate that? And then I'd want Mawande to come in after you.
So I did an exercise. If we halved CEO pay, every worker would only get 29 rand extra a month. Halving CEO pay, halving minister pay is not the answer. What we've got to do is pay a living wage at the bottom. We have to move the bottom up. That means our education system needs to be world class. That means our productivity needs to be world class, and our people need to be employable. They're coming out of school and universities and they're unemployable. So I would say it's a bottom-up approach, not halving the top. There's not enough money to go around. A and B, you might get less qualified and less competent and less skills at that level. So I'm not in favor of halving pay, no.
Mm. But you've also mentioned, before we go to Mawande, you've also mentioned that you don't think the problem that we have is one of how much the pay is for ministers and those kinds of and civil servants. It is more how many we have. Can you elaborate on that?
Yes. So I think our pay for civil servants, in other words, equate grades 1 to 16 up to DG and public office bearers, is fair. We spend a lot of time doing market benchmarking against other countries, against state-owned companies, against the private sector. What's happened is that there are too many of them. There's 1.6 million civil servants. For a population of 60 million and a GDP of 360 billion, it's too much. But we need about 1.2 million. The problem that we have is that no one's going to retrench 400,000 workers in a voting voters or 400,000 voters. Let's put it like that. So it's a conundrum. I would, if I was the president, I would have a moratorium on recruiting people, make sure that the people there are actually working 8 hours a day and producing so that we can catch up with how many people we need in government with what we actually need. And that's the way to do it.
Hey, Mawanda, do you want to come in here? Do you see, let's say we send out Dr. Bassin, you know, with the president to explain this to the South African public, you know, to say that the remuneration for ministers is fair, for public servants it's fair, etc. That we're all looking in the wrong direction. Do you think that would fly?
It wouldn't. Politically, socially, whatever, Kylie, but I'm like, it wouldn't fly. And it doesn't fly with me, too. In fact, for me, to start perhaps my argument, Bramaik, is to say I believe that these benefits that are being gotten by the ministers that we are debating today should be going to public servants, bureaucrats, because those are the people who actually do the work. Probably it will motivate them even more to do more than what they are doing. You know, the DGs and the staffers in all these departments, municipalities, and everywhere else. And we must cut the fat on the politicians, because politicians, for me, they do nothing really. Instead of making speeches, providing political direction. A political direction, I currently believe, is the wrong one that they are providing us, which is why we are where we are in terms of ESCOM and everything else that is crumbling in the country. It's because of weak political leadership. So why should we be remunerating such people more? In any event, to have high salaries for politicians was meant to mitigate against, you know, external influences, being corrupted, being bribed by other interests, such as business interests and any other nefarious interests that are outside the official government, you know, system, as it were. But that still doesn't stop them. We also every day write about corruption and everything else that the same politicians get up to, despite the high salaries that they have. I mean, 2.4 million should be enough to maintain a household, a proper household of six people. Proper, it's actually high-end maintenance. You can live in Sandton with that kind of an annual salary and be very much comfortable. I mean, you already have a free car anyway. In fact, in any event, where do they spend these salaries, Bramaik? Because it looks like we provide them with freebies everywhere. We house them, we feed them, we fly them. And I mean, it's shocking that even kids of ministers, certain numbers, it's just that I don't have these things in front of me, have benefits such as free flights to go see their parents. If, for instance, they are in Cape Town, they are based here in Joburg. So already we are spending too much to make them live comfortably. So I really honestly believe that we should actually be looking to compensate more and give more freebies to public servants in administration, certainly not politicians.
Dr. Mark Bassin, chairperson of the 21st Century Pty Ltd, who specializes in remuneration and remuneration systems. Ruben Malika, acting deputy GM, general manager at the Public Servants Association of South Africa, as well as Mawanda Mashabalala, who's a senior political writer on the Sunday Times. I'd like to thank you very much for joining us on this week's Sunday Times Politics Weekly and for your interesting perspectives on a very thorny and contentious issue in South Africa today. We thank you very much for your time. I'm Mike Siluma. Until next time, do stay safe, stay blessed, and let's do good for our country.